It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 163 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I've got a great interview with Jorge Corona, the creator of Feathers, a new book from Boom Studios that has kind of a Victorian feel to it while dealing with a young child who's covered in black feathers, which is an odd combination, but Corona and his group make it really work and it sings very strongly. We talk about how the comic came to be and about the characters as well as reaction to the book. I really enjoyed it very strongly, and I think you will too if you pick it up. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Jorge Corona, the creator of a great book coming out from Boom Studios called Feathers. How are you doing today, Jorge?
Doing good. Doing better now.
Yeah. We talked that you had kind of a long day to get to the interview, so we won't get into too much of the personal stuff, but let's just say that you're kind of glad today's over, imagine.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we dive in and get started talking about Feathers, which just came out recently, issue number one. Do you want to give a basic, like a TV guide version of what Feathers is all about?
Yeah, sure. Let's give it a try. So Feathers is a fantasy, dark fantasy story set in a world, a very divided world, Victorian-esque type of world. And it's the story of this boy named Poe, who is covered completely in black feathers and who really doesn't know where he comes from, but he's been overprotected his whole life. And it's the story of how he makes basically his first friend. Mm-hmm. Ever, who is this girl from the upper class named Bianca, and kind of like how together and that first adventure not only brings what they have in common, but it also brings out a lot of secrets that the maze, which is the slums where the story is set, and also the White City, all of the secrets that they hide. So That's basically the description of the book.
Okay, now you're writing and doing the art for this, right?
Yeah, I'm taking both roles here.
That's great. Not everybody can do that successfully, but I think you did a really good job on it. I really enjoyed the book a lot, the first issue.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. That means a lot. It's the first time that I'm doing at least the writing part, and it's a nerf wreck. Okay. I'm a nerf wreck right now.
Talk to me. How did you get into comics? How did you start doing comics?
Well, working in comics, I guess I was into comics like ever since, I don't know, like around my teenage years. I was mostly into animation. I'm from Venezuela, and comics weren't that much of a big thing here. You had like the funny, you know, like the comic strips at the back of the newspaper and stuff like that. But I was in love with comic characters before I knew they were comic characters. So yeah, once I realized that there were these books called comics, I was just a fan. And then you know, started trying to get my hands on as many books as I could, or comic books as I could, and kind of learned a little bit about the medium. And while I was doing my undergrad here, I was working as a graphic designer, which eventually led me to work as an illustrator, which was mainly what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then it was thanks to a scholarship that I went to SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design, for mm-hmm. a sequential art MFA. Mm-hmm. And basically, out of my fellow students and like people and contacts I made there, that's kind of like how I eventually got into actually working in comics, which is, I have to say, I know it's cliche, but it is the dream come true. So yeah, I didn't think I had like a web comic here in Venezuela before. So I thought that was the as much as I was going to get to working in comics, but mm-hmm. things led to this, and I have to say, I'm living the dream.
Oh, great, great. Now, so how did you end up with Boom Studios? That's kind of an interesting thing, because apparently you're not living in the States, you're living outside the country, so they must get a lot of proposals and things like that for it. Had you developed the concept before you went to Boom? Had they approached you? You know, how exactly did that happen?
Again, that was due to the 2 years that I spent there in the States when I was going to school at SCAD. And basically, they have this thing called Editor's Day, which they invite different editors from like different companies and kind of like set them up with students so you can get like portfolio reviews and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So during my first year there, I met Rebecca Taylor, who is the editor for the book, and we hit it off, and like she really liked my style and like my work, but because it was originally through Archaea, mm-hmm. so I had my portfolio mostly sample pages and stuff like that. I didn't have like a story to pitch, mm-hmm. and I knew that at least for Archaea, that was mainly what they were looking for. Mm-hmm. So for the second year, and it was my last year there, I knew that she was coming to Editor's Day, and I had this story for Feathers, I don't know, like 5 years prior to that. Like, I started thinking about this story like around 5 or 4 years before I talked to Tay and I showed her the pitch package. Yeah, so like for that second Editor's Day, I prepared this 5 pages, which are really close to what you're seeing at the beginning of issue one of Feathers. I prepared those 5 pages kind of like a setup for the story and presented a synopsis, and thank God she liked the idea. And then after that, it was just I came back home to Venezuela, and then she was already showing kind of like the pages around Archaea and Boom, and then I did the whole proposal type of thing, like the not proposal, like that sounds weird. Sorry, my English sometimes gets like weird. Okay. Words in between. Okay. But basically, I did the whole submission. That's the word I'm looking for. Okay. The whole submission thing through the Archaea website, and that's eventually how Poe, which, yeah, Feathers at that time was just called Poe, got picked up. And yeah, that was basically how I got into that one.
Very cool. Now, you were saying before, this is your first time writing as far as comics goes. You've mostly been an illustrator.
Yeah. Yeah, I've mostly been working as an illustrator. I was lucky enough to, through one of my classmates, meet Alex Antone, who's an editor at DC Entertainment. Hmm. And I've been working with him on Teen Titans Go, the comic based on the new cartoon.
Oh, okay.
And I also did some pages for Justice League Beyond. I did the first appearance of the Flash Beyond character, which was pretty insane because I freaking love that show, and getting the chance to design a character set in that universe was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So that was actually my first gig with American comics and stuff like that. And after that, it's been that. And currently I'm working on Goners, which is an Image book that I'm co-creating with Jacob Simon.
Mm. Cool.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting because when I read the book, I don't get a sense that this is the first time you're writing, because you're doing a lot of good setup along the way. The very first segment of the book is where the child is found, shall we say. And I love the way that went. And, you know, your illustration as well as the dialogue is, I thought, was really poignant and very strong. And so I was drawn right in right away. And of course, how many issues is in this miniseries?
It's going to be 6.
6. I'm really sorry that's only going to be 6.
Depending on how it does, there's plans of trying to get to a second volume type of thing. Mm-hmm. Like that universe, at least in my head, there's some questions that are going to still be missing some answers by the end of volume 1. So that's hopefully going to be my setup for a second volume if it all works out.
Oh, cool.
So hopefully we'll get more than those first 6.
Oh, good. Because, these days it seems like miniseries is the way to go. Ongoings, you've got to leave it where somebody else can pick it up for you. But this way you get to tell your story, which must be great fun.
Yeah, no, I do like that format. Like, I think you can tell a better story that way. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're not thinking of dragging this whole thing, like, of course it depends. Like, like a great example, and it's not a comic book, but like if you have a CSI type of show, like that thing can drag for like I don't know how many years you have with CSI still going, but it's the type of thing that you can set it up to be that way. But I think when you want to deal with characters and kind of like character development and stuff like that, I do like an ending. I do like a beginning, middle, and end. So yeah, miniseries is a fun format.
You know,
for that.
As a comics reader, that's such a rare experience to get an end to something.
Yeah, I know, right?
You know, because X-Men, you go on for decades, and yeah, you never reach an ending place anywhere. And even with, like, Batman, my favorite, you have to come to a place where either there's something of a closing off, but, you know, never really a conclusion.
Yeah, exactly. Good thing that Batman is your favorite, because that is my favorite, too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, no, I'm a fan. But, yeah, I think even with characters like that, you come to appreciate stories better when there's kind of a closure to the character in some way. Mm-hmm. So I think the whole graphic novel type of format where you can tell a story, maybe set it apart from like the continuity, and then just kind of like have that character and have a story, and then you can pretty much do whatever you want with that character in that story. Then I think you can hit some points that you couldn't do if you were working, you know, in like a... These have to fit the continuity, so I don't know. It's fun to have them around, but it's also fun to have those stories where you can say, like, this is how it ended.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but that's, as I said, it's a rare thing, and so I always love those kinds of stories that actually kind of wrap up at some place. It doesn't mean that the story's over as far as this character goes, but if we get to a conclusion, you could always bring the character back in another story, but, you know, so many tales just never, ever end. And it's frustrating at times, so it's great the way you're doing it.
I feel the same way. Also, it leaves the reader kind of like in a place that if you're going to start something, like, you don't know exactly where to pick it up, because it's like, okay, so I have like 100 issues to like kind of like go back and trying to catch up. Mm-hmm. Although, well, you know, like there's obviously new ways and different plot twists and stuff like that to reset everything now that we have the Marvel Secret War. Oh. Whatever that's going to be. There's always a way to kind of like bring new readers and say that this is going to be a new start, which I think it's something that I know is kind of like, it's probably overdone nowadays, or like the way you're doing, I don't know, like I'm excited to see what they do in a way. Mm-hmm. But I think it's something that you eventually need because you have so much stuff that it's like, it's almost impossible now to kind of like keep track. So I don't know. It's... There are comic fans for everything, so probably someone is saying, no, you have to keep the continuity forever. But I sometimes do like those reset buttons and then kind of like tell a story differently.
Well, it doesn't mean that what you've bought in the past is invalidated. You can always pick that book back. You can pick it up and read it again if you want to.
Exactly. Those stories are still going to be there and still are still going to be your favorite. So this new story, it's going to be probably someone else's favorite. So, I mean, I like variety in that sense.
That's a word I use very often, variety. I love to read different kinds of stories, and I like different kinds of characters, too. And so, for me, this is kind of fun. In the way that you've set the character up, and I've got to ask, it's just, you know, the character's name is Poe, and he's got black feathers all over him. Does this have to do with, like, Edgar Allan Poe and the Raven kind of stuff?
Nothing more than a little, like, inside joke type of thing that it's not necessarily inside, because everyone, obviously... gets it. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, at some point I even had it in the dialogue to have Gabriel say something like he was named Poe because he reminded him of a story of a story that he once read or something like that. But it was too much. I was like, no, people are probably going to get it either way. So it doesn't necessarily have to do with Edgar Allan Poe, story-wise, but it is because of him that the character is called Poe. Mm-hmm. Also, I freaking love that name.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's nothing wrong with an homage, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
And so that's what you're doing with that, and I really like that. Another thing that happens in the beginning of the book that I'm fascinated to find out about, and we don't find out in the first book, is that there are apparently two people discussing what's happening.
Yeah.
There's a white box with blue lettering in it, and then there's a purple box with yellow lettering. And these people are discussing what's happening. And so I'm going to be fascinated. I never want to get spoilers. I'd rather go along the way. But it just seems to me that at some point along the way, these two people or these two voices are going to play a part in the story, it seems.
Yeah, well, duality is going to be a big part of the whole book. I mean, you can kind of like see it not only in the fact that you have this two almost opposite, but not necessarily like opposite as in enemies, but like opposite characters with Poe and Bianca is like two sides of a coin. Mm-hmm. So that, and you have the maze, and then you have the white city, and then duality is always going to be there as a theme in the book. Mm-hmm. And those two voices start the book giving a little bit of a voice to that principle of this is not one point of view, this is two points of view, and it's going to be kind of like facing points of view. Mm-hmm. So yeah, eventually you're going to learn a little bit more about those two voices, and a lot of the things you're also going to imply from where the story's taking it. So I don't want to give too much.
No, don't give it away. I'd 10 times rather read the book.
Yeah, exactly. I like that part. And that was actually one of the last things that got in the script. That beginning part was one of the things that I probably worked and reworked and reworked the most in the whole book. But I was pretty happy, and I think it was the right decision to go with those two narrators at the beginning because it set up the kind of like theme again of duality for the rest of the book.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the visual side of it, and particularly in Poe's, you know, how his appearance is like. He's got goggles on.
Yeah.
That remind me a little bit of Kid Flash back. It's funny you mentioned Teen Titans, because I did get the feeling that this was like a Kid Flash kind of goggle that we've seen. Yeah. If you ever watched Young Justice, the Kid Flash runs around with that. And so I was very much, of course, I never see enough of those, so I was happy to see it. And the feathers, and he's at one point he's wearing a great big hat.
Yeah.
When you were developing the visual for Poe, the visuals for him, what kinds of influence did hit you, and what kinds of things did you want to communicate through his visuals?
Yeah, Poe was actually pretty hard to design because I wanted to keep him as simple as possible in a way. Like, I wanted to keep him almost as a silhouette type of character. But by doing that, again, like my background is in graphic design. So just to draw like a body and then add kind of like the rugged edge that someone covered in feathers may have. Like, I wanted to bring a little bit of shape to that and then cohesiveness to the design of Poe. But I always wanted him to be very simple. Just him, the feathers. The goggles came in as a thing to break that uniformity in his design. They also serve, obviously, a purpose in the story, as in Poe has this, what's the word I'm looking for, sensibility to light. So he can...
Sensitivity, that's the word you're
saying. Sensitivity, yeah, yeah, not sensibility. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah,
okay.
To light. So that's mainly the reason why those are there. Visually, those are there to kind of like work. Going back to Batman, is the yellow in the Batman symbol that everyone can use as a target because it's the center of attention type of thing.
Right.
So that's why those yellow goggles are there also, to break the figure and to kind of like give a center point to his design or an accent point.
I really love it. I think it's a great visual for him.
Thank you.
And not only that, he's a counterpoint to Bianca.
Yeah.
She's kind of light and bright, and he's darker and more in the shadows. So there's like a diversity between those two characters. And it's fun to me that they hit it off when they actually meet for the first time.
Yeah. I love issue 2, and soon it should come out, because issue 2 deals mostly with that dynamic between them. And you're going to see the difference, not only, like you say, like visually, obviously, Bianca is kind of like almost this small version of a fairy tale princess with the bow and old Buffy with the dress and all that. And Poe is slicker, it has more edges and it's less round. But you're also going to see it in the way they interact with each other and the way they interact with everything around them. And that was a lot of fun to play around with. And you're going to see a lot of that in issue 2. And I like the fact that they are not necessarily how they appear to be, like, physically. Even though Bianca is, like I said, this princess type of spoiled girl. Like, she's a spoiled girl in a way because of the way of her upbringing, but that's not necessarily just what defines her, and she's going to be the more kind of, like, adventurous one from the two of them. And while Poe, that you see him, and you would think that maybe being this figure in the darkness and all that, like, he could be slicker and everything, and he has a certain grace because moving through the rooftops, just because like that's how he's been living his whole life.
Right.
But other than that, he's not slick. He's not graceful at all in the way he is. So that's a fun aspect to play with those two characters.
Well, they couldn't be more different in my mind. So that's what that kind of conflict between the two of them, or that kind of interaction, is going to be fun to watch as they develop, as they go through an adventure together. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm also fascinated by the fact that each of them has a family and how very different their families are from each other. You know, Gabriel is the one who was raised Poe, and Bianca's family, you talk about a spoiled girl. They are very much into the notion of upper crusty kind of life. And they can't understand why she's bored with it all.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she basically has everything that, in their minds, she could need. It's the limits what actually ticks Bianca off. Like, it's that part, like, there's an end to all of this. Like, you think it's everything I want, but it's also, you're giving me, like, this is as far as you can go type of thing. So, yeah, Poe and Bianca both have boundaries in the sense of their parents, in a way, raised them with boundaries certain aspects. Like, Bianca is confined within the city, and then Poe is confined within basically himself. So when you talk about, like, the big hat and like, kind of like that cape thing that he uses at some point, that's all Gabriel. That's not Poe at all. That's Gabriel trying to, again, conceal Poe and, like, limit him in a way. So, yeah, like, they do have that thing that's similar. And their families, for very different reasons, basically have said the same kind of, like, how can I say it? Like, they both, Poe and Bianca, kind of, like, go against the same thing, but in a very different way type of thing.
Well, it's kind of fun. Again, here's that contrast coming up. And we get to see how the two different families, they actually do some of the same things, but for very different reasons.
Yeah.
And it's great fun to see that. And of course, everybody with families can really relate to how these things work.
Yeah.
So going forward, it's going to be fun to see how all this stuff interacts and how they do it. And I've got to, of course, mention there was this one character that fascinates me. He's got a great big red scarf and a top hat.
Yeah.
And he has, and music comes around, and the music kind of plays, it's in a red color in there. So there's something about it, kind of maybe Pied Piper-ish.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah. And so he interacts with these children, and things start to happen. And there's, again, children seem to be another theme going on. But I'm just kind of fascinated because I don't think we've seen the end of that character just this one time.
No. He's definitely going to be around, and it's going to take a while for the path to kind of like merge or collide, I guess. But yeah, he's going to be around, and you're going to keep seeing him and him doing his thing, whatever that thing is. But eventually it will lead to the same ending. And he's, yeah, he's a fun character. He has no name. Actually, the red scarf is how we call him in this thing. So he has no name. He's the boogeyman. So he's the one in the dark. And that's a lot of fun because the reader knows that he's there, but for the most part, not everyone else does. So he's going to be playing around in the shadows a lot until we finally see. I'm actually working that scene right now.
Cool.
Issue 4.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, one thing I wanted to mention too is that I thought your pacing is very good. It's very strong. Once you get started, things happen just long enough to keep our interest, not too long. And then things shift when it's an appropriate time. And we get to see things that build up what's happening a little later on. So I really thought that, I'm kind of surprised that you haven't done a lot of writing before because, man, it feels very strong and very put together and very cohesive in the way that you're doing all this. So I really have to tell you, you did a good job if this is your first time at it. Wow.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks. Like that actually not only means a lot, but it helps a lot. But yeah, this is the first time I'm doing like a long format type of story. Like, obviously I've done like short stories, like 10 pages or stuff like that for like anthologies and such. But this is the first time I'm doing this, this big type of story with this many characters and this many plots and subplots and stuff like that. So it's been fun. But it's terrifying. It's like I can tie away some things with the drawing, but writing is where I'm like, well, I'm naked here. Like, do as you wish, because yeah, this is as you know, soul bearing as I can get. So thank you. That means a lot.
Well, keep it up because it's great stuff. I really like it. And one more question I've got about the book is that I like the coloring real well. And it's Jen Hickman is the one providing the colors.
Yeah, Jennifer Hickman. Yeah, we actually went together to SCAD. And that's how we met. And yeah, no, she's been great with the colors. Like, she came along, I was starting inks for issue 2 or something like that. So she came along and did complete issue 1. And I was blown away by, I mean, I knew her work and I knew her projects and stuff. She's an amazing artist too. But then she gave a whole other layer to the storytelling within the book, just, you know, with the mood and the colors and everything. So yeah, no, like the whole team, like her and DJ, the letter, it's been a pleasure working with them because they brought life to this book beyond just me drawing tiny houses. Yeah, so they made it all work and they brought it all together. And yeah, I couldn't be happier with that.
Well, that's great because it's an excellent book. I really loved it. I've unfortunately, somebody got to review it before I got to claim it at the website where I write reviews. But somewhere I was, one of the future issues will come out and I'll write a review of it because I really like it a lot. So we'll do. Now, as far as the future goes for Feathers, are they going to collect this into a trade or a hardcover or something after the sixth issue?
Yeah, I think that's the plan. Feathers, like I said, like originally when I first pitched the story to Arkea, it was as a book. It wasn't necessarily as a six-issue miniseries. Mm-hmm. But yeah, after the whole Boom thing, then we went in that direction. We broke it apart into the six chapters. And then after that, we're going to have the whole book collected or the whole story collected.
Cool.
So yeah.
If I can put a request and make it a hardcover instead of a trade.
Yeah, no. One of the reasons I went to Arkea with this story, I always had ideas for like stories. You draw, you build stories in your head. So this was definitely the one that I was most passionate about. And I went to Arkea because I loved the products that they had, that they put out there, and like the books and the way they did the binding and everything. And like each book had a personality and I loved that. And yeah, I'm sure when that time comes, like I'm sure that it's going to be a gorgeous design book. It's going to be great. Well, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to that.
It already looks great. And the cover particularly makes me think of hardcover. The way that it's been designed, it really feels like a hardcover, and then the back cover as well. It just feels like hardcovery kind of thing. And stories like this that are complete ones, I like to have as hardcovers just because I can pull it out occasionally and just dive back into it again and read the whole story. So that's why I kind of feel that way. This would make a great hardcover. It really would.
Let's hope it does.
Okay. Now, you said you had some other stuff that you've been working on, like Teen Titans and things. Are there other projects that we should be aware of besides, like, say, Teen Titans and Justice League Beyond is over with now. So are there other things you're working on that we could keep an eye out for?
Right now, this three books have been taking most of my of my daytime. But Gunners just got picked up for a second arc, which is exciting because, I've had a lot of fun with that book. So that's going to come up in the future. And right now I'm working actually on the last issue of this first arc, which should hit stores, I think, next month. So that's going to be a closure to this first arc of Gunners. And then we're having a second one. And I have another couple small projects, like 10 pages here or 6 pages here. And maybe, I don't know, we'll see. I'm trying to finish these books and then plan ahead because, it's been insane the amount of work, but it's been a lot of fun. I mean, it's what I love to do. So
it must be gratifying, too, because you created this whole character and scenario and thing. So, and you've also had experience doing Titans, and so you've done existing franchises.
Yeah.
So it must be a new experience for you to be able to do this, something that you've created for a change.
Yeah. It's like I said, I'm really proud of this book at the same time that I'm scared out of mine. I'm glad that it had at least the reception that it seems it's having, and that people are liking it, and it wasn't just me drawing it, So that's been enough reward on its own. Yeah, that's made me really happy.
Well, I want to tell you a really quick story. You're in good company when you're terrified about how this is going to go. Way back in the beginning of the New 52, I had an opportunity to interview Scott Snyder, who does Batman, speaking of which.
Oh, yeah.
And he couldn't sleep at night. He was so terrified about how this was all going to go over. He got the sales numbers, and they were like through the roof, and he was, instead of being elated, he was terrified. Because here they thought, huge numbers going in, and he was like, oh, are they going to be disappointed when they get a hold of this? And I had to finally say to him, I said, Scott, I said, the reason why the number is so high is we're dying to see what you're going to tell us, to tell the stories you're going to do. And so he doesn't talk about missing sleep so much anymore in the last couple of years, but he was terrified at the beginning, and I had to console him because, man, we were dying to see what he was going to do.
He's been doing an amazing job with that.
Incredible.
I've been loving what he's been doing with Batman, and
it's great stuff. Well, you're in good company, so don't get worried about that. And I would encourage you to go ahead and continue to do more writing because it really feels nice and tightly put together. So, and that's the kind of storytelling I enjoy the most. And so I think Feathers is off to a tremendous start. I think you're doing the right things at the right time. And man, I wish you much more success going forward. And we get to see a lot more of your work.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks. Thank you a lot. It means a lot, yeah, really. It's, like I said, I never in my wildest dreams I thought I was going to be working in the comics that I used to read. So not only working, but writing, it's mind-blowing. So thank you. I guess I can't find a better word than that, than thanks.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. From flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. That's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.